think about the way the world is and the way that the world could be.
All of our systems are interrelated and interdependent.
There's 1,000 different voices that nobody hears.
We're looking at a human being, and there's life story.
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 Story. Story. Story.
Connection to the people we don't know that live near us.
An Elevated Denver starts now.
Welcome back to the Elevated Denver podcast. Since you last heard from us, we have been busy building community-driven solutions to homelessness. We published a community landscape mapping the journeys of 40 unhoused neighbors as they navigated Denver's housing and homelessness system. The landscape showed us that, despite everyone experiencing their own journey and story, nearly everyone ran into the same systemic barriers trying to maintain or regain stability in their lives. We knew the system needed to be fixed, and that if we tackled each barrier one by one, we could do just that in what we call our collaboratories. Over 6 sessions, the collaboratory participants dug deep into the problem, prototyped solutions, and landed on something transformative: peer-led resource connection hubs. Through this special 3-episode series, we're taking you behind the scenes of the collaboratory, the challenges, the breakthroughs, and the solution that's inspiring a new way forward. You'll hear directly from participants about what makes this innovative model and the solution that came out of it so powerful. Homelessness isn't inevitable. We believe it is a failure of systems, not people. And we are shifting power to those most impacted to design solutions rooted in equity, dignity, and shared humanity.
Welcome back to this special podcast series from Elevated Denver. Today, we're going to dig into why homelessness is a systems issue and why we must solve it at that level for real change to occur. We're going to talk about how we've gotten to this level of crisis in Denver and as a nation. To help us, we've invited Don Burns to the studio to give us a brief history of homelessness. He's going to talk about key policies and practices over the past several decades that have landed us where we are now. Don Burns and his wife Lynn are the co-founders of the Burns Institute for Poverty Research at the Colorado Center on Law and Policy. Don has been working on the issue of homelessness for almost 40 years. He is the senior advisor to the Community Economic Defense Project and an author of multiple books, including Journeys Out of Homelessness, A Nation in Denial, and When We Walk By. Don has also been an executive director for various nonprofits, a historian, researcher, and educational policy consultant for the U.S. Congress around issues of homelessness and poverty. Welcome, Don.
What drives your passion for this issue of homelessness?
We really need to figure out how to provide housing, stability, and the opportunity for real self-fulfillment for every member of our society, including those at the very bottom.
We're here to talk a little bit about the context of homelessness and some of the background. So to start, share with us your perspectives on how we got to this current level of crisis around homelessness.
Let me say that we have had people experiencing homelessness ever since the colonies. So we've always had the problem. It has exploded in the last 40, 50 years for a number of reasons. And let me just tick off some of them. First of all, deinstitutionalization of the mentally ill from the state hospitals without adequate provision for subsequent care. The decriminalization of alcohol without creating enough detox and health facilities. Urban renewal, which eliminated housing for thousands of people who were in SRO hotels. And the baby boom. We also shifted from a public federal response to housing for poor people to the private sector. in the early 70s under Nixon. And they created the Section 8 housing, which became the Housing Choice Voucher Program. And then in 1987, the passage of the McKinney-Vento authorization of a major support for people experiencing homelessness. Around the year 2000, we shifted from a continuum of care, which was sort of a step up toward housing, to a housing first tradition. And then we had huge budget deficits after Clinton under Bush 2 and Trump. And so we have had an inadequate access to resources to really address the problem. Then there was the Great Recession, 2008 to 2010. COVID created major problems. And during COVID, President Biden enacted some assistance, which ended a year or two ago. And then immigration became a major issue. So all of these events have affected the amount of and the seriousness of the problem of homelessness over the last 50, 60 years.
So Don, homelessness is about housing, and you mentioned the housing first model, but it isn't just about housing, is it?
No, it's not just about housing. This is a multifaceted problem. The availability of housing is clearly a major part of it, but it also involves access to healthcare, for example. And the cost of healthcare is simply beyond the capacity of many of the people experiencing homelessness. You look at the criminal justice system, and people coming out of incarceration often have no place to go and become members of the group of people experiencing homelessness. The educational system and foster care, something like a third of the kids in foster care end up becoming homeless. And that's just not acceptable. And then the public benefit system is simply inadequate. One of the striking things is that only about a quarter of the people who are eligible for TANF, the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, only a quarter of those who are eligible actually receive it. Again, that's not acceptable. So it's a multifaceted problem.
We also had the privilege of interviewing Jeff Olivet, the recent director of the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness under the Biden-Harris administration. Here, Jeff talks about his perspective on the systemic nature of homelessness.
My name is Jeff Olivet. I'm a founder of the Jeff Olivet Consulting Group, but I've been working in homelessness for almost three decades. Started as a street outreach worker and case manager. I worked in overnight homeless shelters. I worked in 24-hour drop-in centers. I worked in supportive housing programs. And in the early days of my time in this work, I was involved in local coalition building, advocacy work, systems change work, very much shoulder to shoulder with people experiencing homelessness. After my time in direct service, I got involved in national advocacy work, research, policy change, and ended up working in many, many states and communities. I believe that homelessness is a multi-system failure. I don't think it's an individual failure. I just see so much trauma and so much pain and so much, you know, even when we talk about addiction and mental illness and depression and PTSD and all of that stuff, that's coming from somewhere. People have had a really tough road. And if we lose that compassion for people and blame them for their homelessness, then I think we're off on the wrong foot when it comes to actually trying to solve things. If we believe that people are homeless because they made bad decisions, then you get into this kind of paternalistic mindset of we need to fix that person. If we believe, on the other hand, that folks are homeless because we didn't do a good job around providing healthcare for them, around helping young people through school and into the workforce, around helping people who have survived domestic violence or sexual assault or war or disability, if we're not viewing that from a systems lens to say, we have created systems that didn't work well for people. And what we see as a result of that is homelessness on a very large scale. The systems lens also says it's not just one thing that broke down. It's a whole bunch of stuff that broke down. For people to be homeless on the scale that we see homelessness in the United States, it means we've got a whole bunch of systems that aren't working well. Our housing system, our criminal justice system, our healthcare system that provides amazing care for people who have the money and the access to it, and it's really hard for folks who don't. All of these systems are part of the problem. Therefore, they're all part of the solution. You can't just focus on one piece of that system or the other parts don't work.
One systemic failure is the gap between wages and housing costs. The National Low Income Housing Coalition publishes an annual report called Out of Reach, which includes a housing wage. That's an estimate of the hourly wage a full-time worker needs to earn to afford a rental home at fair market rent. Don shares his perspective.
This is one of the most disturbing aspects. The housing wage nationally in 2024 was $32. Let me get the number exactly right. It's $32.11, which is almost 4.5 times the minimum wage across the country. And there are 20 states who still use the $7.25 as the minimum wage. In Colorado, the housing wage last year was $37.47 compared to a state minimum wage of $14.81, or 2.5 times the minimum wage. In the Denver metro area, hold on to your hat, the housing wage was $42.33, 2.3 times the Denver minimum wage of $18.21. So nowhere in the country is any state in a position to provide housing at a minimum wage. In almost every situation, the housing wage is at least 2 times what the minimum wage is. It's frightening about the percentages of people, how much of their income they're spending on housing as opposed to everything else. And then one of the things that people don't seem to understand is that all of us are getting a housing subsidy. A recent Federal Reserve study indicated that high-end homeowners end up with about 80% of the total housing subsidy that the federal government is offering. And people at the low end get 20%. So, as I like to say, the people who need it the most get the least. The people who need it the least get the most.
That's an enormous wage gap. And when we're also facing rising housing costs, it's no wonder so many people in our community and in all communities are experiencing homelessness. Further illustrating this point, Don shared that 45% to 50% of all unhoused adults are working full or part-time, but aren't making enough to pay rent. And those who are not working are not capable of working for various reasons, like disability.
These folks have jobs, and they simply can't afford housing. Unfortunately, one of the things that we tend to do is our attitudes and stereotypes seem to come to the fore as we talk about people experiencing homelessness. As my colleagues and I were working on our recent book, When We Walk By, the issue of networks of support became critical. And one of the most wonderful phrases or comments that one of the folks made was, "I never realized I was homeless when I lost my housing, only when I lost my family and friends." Think about the following. Who do you call at 2 o'clock in the morning when you have a crisis? We all have people. We have spouses. We have other family members. We have friends. We have neighbors. We have people from church or wherever that we can call on to come and be of assistance to us when we have a crisis.
Beyond the numbers, Don talked about isolation and a lack of social networks as a critical piece of homelessness.
One of the most universal characteristics of people experiencing homelessness is social isolation. They don't have access to those kinds of networks. We elevated the term relational poverty to explore or to describe the kinds of isolation that people experiencing homelessness have. They just don't have networks of support. They don't have the community that can provide the kind of support that they need. And frankly, if they did, they wouldn't be homeless. The other part of this, and this is something that I feel very strongly about, is that most of us in housing have a very bad relationship with people experiencing homelessness. And so if you think of that in terms of poor relationships, here's another, from the flip side, another example of relational poverty. For all kinds of reasons, we have very negative attitudes. I'm currently reading a book called Aporophobia, which is fear of poverty, or fear of the poor. Clearly, systemic racism, classism, and fear of people who are poor is very much part of our culture. And this helps to explain why there is so much relational poverty that we in housing have in terms of our relationship with those experiencing homelessness.
Don, you have laid out for us a number of challenges that we as a society face and how that has brought us to the level of homelessness in our community. Where are the solutions? How do we begin to unwind these patterns, these policies, these behaviors that have gotten us here?
First of all, there's no one-size-fits-all silver bullet. This is a very complicated, very nuanced set of issues, and there's no simple answer. One of the things that you and Elevated Denver and others have helped me to come to understand is that many of us feel as though what I like to call, we have the savior complex. We think we know what the answers are, and we are going to provide those answers for those poor people who need help, need fixing. That just isn't the case. A very good friend of mine said recently to me when I was talking with her, "Don't give me a place at your table. It's my table. I'm the one who has experienced homelessness. I know what I went through. I know what I need. I know what I want. Don't tell me what I need." And I think that is not only very profound, but it's also something we need to take very seriously.
We really appreciate Don's advocacy for people with lived experience driving solutions to homelessness, including the one that came out of our collaboratory.
One of the things that I find very encouraging, and I have to give Elevated Denver and the leadership and the board and all of the people involved a real pat on the back for, is you have realized that it's important to figure out ways to get people with lived experience to drive the agenda and to come up with their own sense of what they need and how to go about addressing that. The notion of these resource hubs, I think, is a really brilliant idea. It's something I've never heard of before. And I've been looking at this issue for 40 years. So that really becomes a critical element. And so one of the solutions is for us to step back and say, okay, you folks tell us what you need. Tell us what ideas you have about how to fix it. And it's going to take time. We have to take it one step at a time. But let us be led by you. And I think that's a very important piece of how we should be moving forward.
When I think about my career in homelessness, I think
about the various ups and downs. I think about the frustration at the failure of the vast majority of us to think humanely about our brothers and sisters. And I keep thinking, how do we change attitudes? And one of the things that occurs to me is that babies are not born with attitudes. They learn them. They learn them from their parents. They learn them from school. They learn them from the neighborhood. They learn them from their buddies. They learn them from church. How do we intervene so that people grow up with a more constructive, more positive attitude about those who are less fortunate than they are?
The message really is that we are one greater community, and in order to move forward effectively together, we must acknowledge one another in that.
Everybody is someone somebody. It takes a village. We are not independent. We're all interdependent, and that means everybody, because having people experiencing homelessness, they're part of our community, and they can provide us with as much insight and knowledge as we can provide them. And we'd better wake up to that. We're talking about 5 million people over the course of a year who are experiencing homelessness. Unfortunately, in this country, in terms of major social policy issues, every issue tends to get siloed. And this is certainly the case of homelessness. Let's remember that we all have a responsibility to relate to and listen to people who are in less good personal shape than we are, because they have good ideas and they will be the ones who really help to frame the best foot forward.
Don has been working in this field for decades, and we appreciate his support for our work and agreement that lived experts must be driving solutions to homelessness. We believe the Collaboratory provides the pathway to those solutions and starts to break down the silos that he mentioned. So tune in next time for a deep dive on the Collaboratory solution, peer-led resource connection hubs. We'll share what hubs look like, why we believe that solution will work, and what's coming next.
This Elevated Denver podcast series is made possible with the help of a broad community and the support of Don and Lynn Burns. Thank you both for your ongoing support of our work and of the podcast. Thank you also to Sal and Mimi Tripodi for your support. We could not do our work without the expertise and engagement of the co-designers who participated in the Collaboratory, the champions who provided critical feedback and input, and others we have learned from along the way. Thank you for lending your voices here, but more importantly, for giving shape to a new future in which homelessness is solvable. The podcast is produced by the Elevated Denver team. Editing, sound design, and music are composed and provided by Jesse Boynton at the Olympic Recording Studio. If you found this episode interesting and would like to learn more or engage in our work, please visit us at elevateddenver.co and sign up for our newsletter. Be the first to be notified when the Collaboratory Issue Brief and Toolkit are published. And stay tuned as we pilot the solution and build our next Collaboratory. You can also find us on Instagram and LinkedIn. Follow along, share our work, and join the movement. It's going to take all of us to build an elevated Denver.